Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Governor Tony Evers announces he won't seek a third term, opening the door to what could become a crowded Democratic primary. Meanwhile, Democrats launch their first bids to flip seats in the Senate next year, with an eye towards a majority. Plus, Attorney General Josh Call joins his 26th lawsuit against President Donald Trump's administration. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 25th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Welcome to Rewind. Thanks so much for filling in this week, Scott.
You bet.
It's a big week. We got a big announcement this week. Governor Tony Evers is not running for re-election. He would have been going up for a historic third term and announced yesterday in a video online that he will not be seeking re-election. He is retiring from politics, and we have a little bit of video of his announcement.
I promised you when I ran for this office, and I always worked to do the right thing, and I always give it to you straight, and that I'd always try to be a governor for all of Wisconsin. And I work every day to keep those promises. That'll never change. I began my run for governor as a proud Plymouth progressive, and that's still who I am today. I'm a science teacher at heart who ended up running for office and winning 5 straight statewide elections. So would I win if I ran a 6th time? Of course, no question about that. But whether I'd win or not has never been part of my calculus about running again. It's why, Wisconsin, I'm announcing that I will not be running for a third term. And so it's humbled to be your governor. This is the best job I ever had. And folks, we are not done yet. There is, as always, much work to do. In Wisconsin, I'll be working just as hard as I have for the last 6 years to keep doing the right thing and deliver for you. So let's get to work. Forward for you and for Wisconsin always.
All right, so he says he definitely would win a third term if he runs. He's confident, but that he really wants to spend more time with his family. You know, there's been a lot of speculation for the last couple of weeks. We got these fundraising reports a couple weeks ago that showed he did not seem to be setting up a competitive third term campaign. There was some conversation about his age. He would have been 79 at the end of a third term. What are you understanding about why he made this decision?
Yeah, a couple things on the fundraising report. It was way down compared to where he was 4 years ago at this time, when, of course, he did run for a second term. But when I talked with Democrats about that, you know, they felt confident that if he wanted to run for a third term, the money would come very quickly. That wouldn't really be an issue. So they weren't too put off by the fundraising report. I think the age factor and, you know, running for a third term is not easy. Tommy Thompson's the only governor who was elected to more than 2 4-year terms. We used to have 2-year terms, and there were a few governors who got elected to more than 2 of those. But Tommy's the only one when under a 4-year term who's been elected more than 2 times. And, of course, Scott Walker was the last one to try to run for a third term, and who did he lose to but Tony Evers? So you have that factor, and then you have the factor, as you mentioned, of the age. And Tony Evers is 73 right now. And as he mentioned in his video, he wants to spend time with his 3 kids and his 9 grandkids. A lot of politicians say they're leaving to spend time with family. None of us know for sure what Tony Evers is going to do in the future, but I would say it's a pretty safe bet that his spotlight, he will remove himself from the spotlight to a very, very large degree. I think you can pretty much hold him to his word in that video.
Yeah, and you know, the context is he's currently the most popular politician in the state of Wisconsin, kind of continuously polls pretty well for a Democratic governor. And so he's going out a little bit at the height of his power. He's also going out at a time that Democrats are in the minority, of course, in Washington, and so have their eyes towards the midterms. And so this really sets us up for a wide open Democratic primary. As of this morning, we have one definitely announced contender and one sort of basically announced contender. So Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez announced her campaign with a kind of splashy video earlier this morning, kind of indicating that she knew that this was coming. And then Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said that he is, I believe he said, putting the steps into place to start exploring a run.
In future weeks, we'll start to take steps to prepare for a run.
There you go. Yes.
So that he's got the notion of a plan.
Notion of a plan, yes. Exactly. And so those are kind of our official contenders as we know them. But then, you know, lots of tea leaves about who else may be considering a run. Attorney General Josh Call, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, State Senator Calder Royds, Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, and former Wisconsin Democratic Party Chair Ben Wickler. All names that have been floated, people who have, you know, who I've spoken to and have spoken to other reporters, floating various degrees of certainty about whether they will run. And so I think in the next couple of weeks, we'll be hearing lots and lots of announcements. I was really interested in Sarah Rodriguez's video that she kind of had to thread this needle, both of explaining where she stands on the issues, and she pointed to abortion, she pointed to Medicaid expansion, she pointed to opposing President Donald Trump, but she also just kind of had to introduce who she is as a human being. So none of these people are necessarily huge statewide front runners at this particular moment.
Right. I mean, Sarah Rodriguez is lieutenant governor and has a very, very low profile. The job of lieutenant governor has really no duties, so they kind of can do with it what they want. She's been in that job for just 2 years because she took it. She ran in 2024 or 2022 when Mandela Barnes ran for U.S. Senate. He, of course, he was lieutenant governor in Evers' first term. Yesterday, you had Mandela Barnes saying he's kind of looking at the governor's race, which had some Democrats kind of wondering what's going on because he ran for U.S. Senate, of course, and narrowly lost to Ron Johnson. There's a lot going on behind the scenes right now. There is a potential that every statewide office could be open with no incumbents. If Josh Call runs for governor, the attorney general would be open. If Sarah Godlewski runs for governor or lieutenant governor, secretary of state would be open. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of palace intrigue right now as all these dominoes start to fall into place. As you mentioned, Rodriguez, right out of the bat with that video this morning, 7 a.m. As far as I know, up till tape time, Tony Evers hasn't commented one way or the other, so we have no endorsement or anything from him yet or whether he intends to endorse. He typically doesn't get involved in primaries and Democratic primaries, but this one obviously is a lot different than previous ones have been. So there's a lot obviously yet to play out on the Democratic side. The last time we had a big primary like this was in 18 when Evers ran for the first time. And some of the same players were involved back then that are looking at it again this year. So it's going to be a wild year and a half for sure.
Yeah, it's been less than 24 hours since that Evers announcement, and we've already again seen two people kind of officially or almost officially throw their hands in the ring. So I think we can gear up for a kind of busy couple of weeks. The other thing that happened this week before he made that announcement was that State Senator Chris Larson kind of led a letter that was signed on to by a number of sort of further left members of the Democratic Party, both at the state and kind of local levels, essentially saying what they were looking for in backing a governor, a little bit of targeting Evers from the left before we knew whether or not Evers was running. And it basically said, you know, we will only back a governor who will back certain priorities, so things like closing the Green Bay prison, expanding Medicaid, backing health care for all these kind of significantly more progressive policies. And so that's also, I think, kind of setting us up potentially to see a bit of jostling among Democrats for, like, what is the soul of the Wisconsin Democratic Party? Who will take that baton in the governor's race? And then as you say, we will have all these legislative races as well. To what extent will those types of priorities be coming into play here? And of course, so we're talking about the Democratic primary, there will be Republican contenders as well. So we've had two declared Republican candidates for a couple weeks now, Washington County Executive Josh Showman and Manufacturing Executive Bill Berrien. This announcement from Evers could change things. It could inspire more contenders. We've got a tweet up on the screen right now from Congressman Tom Tiffany. There was a kind of joke from the conservative news site Wisconsin Right Now that anybody running for governor needs to know how to hold a fish or catch a fish. Mm-hmm. And Tom Tiffany just wanted to make sure that people know he knows how to hold up a fish. And so we might see more of these Republican contenders coming out. Former Governor Scott Walker tweeted a photo of a Make Wisconsin Great Again hat with sort of a amusing, you know, kind of mood. And also, I did not know this, you know, the hat says 45-47, a reference to President Donald Trump's terms. If Scott Walker were to run again and win, he would be the 45th and 47th governor of Wisconsin. So, you know, nothing declared there, but definitely a lot of speculation on the Republican side.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the Walker tweet was the first time he tweeted it, he had a little winky face emoji indicating that it was a joke, and then he later edited the post to remove that. So he's one who enjoys the attention. And mentioning Walker does make me want to go back to the Tony Evers decision or intention of spending time with family. You know, if you look back at recent governors and what they've done when they leave office, they have taken different paths. And the last Democrat prior to Tony Evers, Jim Doyle, similar route. He decided against a third term in 2010. And when he left public office, I don't think he made a single public comment for over a year. There was a long period where he, you know, kind of upheld what he thought the tradition ought to be, and what had been for some was when you leave office, you let the new person come in and do their thing. When, of course, that first year of Scott Walker was one of the most tumultuous years in Wisconsin politics in modern or history or ever with Act 10. But Jim Doyle started to reemerge a little bit more publicly after that and has done some things here and there, but has really kept a very, very low profile. Scott Walker, by contrast, has not kept a low profile. He's been very public on cable TV a lot, on social media a lot, campaigned extensively with Brad Schimmel in the Supreme Court race. He's definitely been involved in politics. And if you go back to Tommy Thompson, you know, he left midway through his fourth term to become the Health and Human Services Secretary in Washington, served there, and then came back, tried to run for U.S. Senate, tried to run for president, he did run for both. Didn't win, and has been very, very public, was, you know, interim president of the University of Wisconsin system more recently. So you do see different ways that these politicians handle being out of office. Tony Evers, if I had to guess, I would think he'd be more in the Jim Doyle realm of things, but, you know, he we'll see in a year and a half how he conducts himself after he's no longer governor.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. In the Sarah Rodriguez video, you know, she makes sure to say, I ran with Tony Evers. She has photos of herself with Tony Evers. And so I think for a number of Democrats, it will behoove them to kind of align themselves with, again, this very popular Democratic figure. And of course, he still has a year and a half in office. And so we'll see kind of how he wants to set himself up for some kind of post-governor position. I need to say, you know, the work continues, which who knows what that exactly looks like and means.
Right, because the next year and a half is still going to be Republican-controlled legislature. So the budget is done. I would not expect there to be much more done between now and the end of Tony Evers' term, but you never know.
Right. Well, and one of the things that is coming up is that Democrats are trying to flip the legislature, certainly trying to flip the Senate, and then they say that they are actually going for a full trifecta, which is not something that we've seen for a very long time in the state of Wisconsin. So over the last little while, two Democrats who are currently in the Assembly have announced runs for competitive seats in the Senate. That's Representative Jenna Jacobson of Oregon and Representative Robin Bining of Tosa, Wauwatosa, and they are both going for Senate districts currently held by Republicans but that are considered much more competitive under the new maps. So Jacobson going after the 17th district, that's kind of the southwest central shape of the state, and then Vining going after this kind of suburban Milwaukee district. In order to flip the Senate, all they would have to do is keep every single seat that they currently have and flip two. So in theory, that could be one path, although at least one currently democratically held seat is also considered in contention. And so I suspect we're going to see at least one more Democrat who could comfortably lose their assembly seat, kind of go for one of those other, maybe for the Racine area seat currently held by Van Wangard. But we're just going to see, I think, a lot of these things coming. And again, we are a year and a half out from this election, but things are starting now. The money train has to start, you know, going down the tracks.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you mentioned the trifecta. The last time there was a kind of a turnover that could happen next year, we saw in the 2010 election, because going into that year, it was all Democratic control, Jim Doyle, Democratic legislature. And in 2010, Republicans took everything, all three. Obviously, going into 2026, Democrats have the governor's office. So if they were able to get both chambers of the legislature, it wouldn't be a full flip, but it would be, you know, they would have everything. But if they only get the Senate and they are able to hold on to the governor's office, you're kind of in this, you know, still divided government, but a lot more power for the Democrats than they have currently. And of course, the Republicans could win, you know, the governor's office and maintain the majority in the Senate. So there's a lot yet to be played. But Democrats are definitely optimistic about their chances in the legislature.
Yeah, so stakes definitely high, kind of on both sides of the aisle. So if anyone was hoping that 2026 would be like a chill election year, I think
I don't think there is such a thing in Wisconsin, no.
Yeah, I don't think we have one of those to look forward to. And speaking of, we also got some new party fundraising numbers this past week. So we've gotten a lot of campaign finance from individual candidates, but we also learned that the state parties the Democrats have outraised the state Republicans by more than $136,000. Now, they're six-figure reports. That's not anything to sneeze at, but that's not necessarily a huge amount of money. But I do think, again, as these official campaigns start to take off, we will see much more money coming into the parties because the parties can spend an unlimited amount of money. And so once you have kind of candidates to really rev up donors, we're going to start seeing, I think, the parties rev up their engines as well.
I mean, the other thing to mention, which is kind of traumatic for some people, but all these things we're talking about are going to happen after we have another Supreme Court election.
That's right.
So before any vote is cast for the legislature or the governor's race, we're going to go through an entire Supreme Court election. Okay. So there's going to be a lot of money spent on that. We're still waiting to see what Justice Rebecca Bradley decides, but I don't want people to forget that we're going to go through that election before we start going into the other stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? We'll have a springtime election, then we'll have the primaries, then we'll have a general, and to your point that we don't yet know who will be the conservative candidate for that Supreme Court election. People I've spoken to have said that really needs to be figured out by Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Labor Day is kind of fast approaching, and right. So again, they have plenty of time to kind of officially get their names on the ballot, but we see so much money that goes into these elections that anyone who wants to be competitive needs to have access to those resources. Mm-hmm. So yeah, lots to kind of continue to keep our eyes on. And then kind of finally this week, we saw Attorney General Josh Call file his 26th lawsuit of the Trump administration, which is about 6 months old at this point. And so just to kind of stick with the gubernatorial theme for a moment, if an attorney general perhaps wanted to run for governor, taking an adversarial approach towards the current president probably would look pretty good for a campaign. He hasn't announced yet, but it is kind of suspected that he might. So this is a lawsuit against a recent Trump administration action that kind of restricted how undocumented immigrants could or rather could not access certain social safety net programs. So things like Head Start, behavioral and mental health clinics, substance abuse treatment. Trump has said this is a way of making sure that those resources only go towards American citizens. Providers say it creates hurdles because they would have to verify the citizenship status of the people who use their programs. And so the states that signed on to the lawsuit, Call included, they agree with that. They say it places an unfair burden on these service providers, and that also it doesn't follow kind of the nitty-gritty of the administrative rulemaking process. So just kind of an interesting thing to, again, kind of be hanging his hat on ahead of potentially a run.
Yeah, Call is filing a lot of lawsuits against Trump, and Sarah Rodriguez in her launch video called Trump a maniac. So you're kind of seeing where those two Democrats stand, at least at the moment, on the president, and we'll see how the rest of the field deals with Trump.
I mean, that will be kind of an interesting thing, and I'm curious how you think the figure of Trump is going to play out in the 2026 midterm election, the governor's election, maybe even the Supreme Court race.
It's interesting because, you know, just like the Republicans, the Democrats are going to have a primary, right? So there's often a message you deliver to your primary voters that is more partisan than what you deliver in the general election. So I think when you look at the polling, Democrats, I think the most recent Marquette poll, or every Marquette poll shows Democrats at like 98-97% opposed to Trump, Republicans 95% or whatever in favor of him. So I think as a Democratic candidate, you have to appeal to those primary voters on their feelings about Trump, so you're going to be maybe calling him a maniac. And then when you shift to the general election, you're going to have to moderate that to some degree to get those independent voters that are so important. although right now independent voters are also not too high on Trump, but in a year and a half, who knows? So that's kind of the tightrope for the Democrats. The Republicans have the same thing, but on the opposite end. You know, they have to show their support for Trump to those primary voters, and then in the general, they have to walk that line of like, well, we got to win over some independents who maybe don't feel so great about Trump, so we need to like deal with that. But that's a little bit of ways away, but right now it's clear, you know, where Josh Call stands and where Sarah Rodriguez stand.
Yeah, and we've seen actually some of that sort of moderating with Bill Berrien, for example, who was somebody who did not support President Trump in the past. He actually endorsed Nikki Haley in the most recent election, and now has said he, you know, is trying to court that endorsement. Interestingly, he was kind of the one Republican who came out immediately after the announcement, held a little press call from a campaign stop out of his car, and talked about, you know, sort of trying to push back against sort of a Democratic machine is kind of how he described it. So again, trying to align himself with Trump against Evers. And so this is also a kind of interesting moment to see now that Evers is out, how, like, what is the opposition that Republicans are aligning themselves with and against? It's just all of these kind of new unknowns.
Right. And I think it's worth taking a little step back and looking at the calendar. It is July of 2025, okay? The primary is in August of 2026. You go home today and talk to your neighbor and your friend, they'll know that probably the Tony Evers dropped out. They're not going to know. I don't think they would know probably most of the names that we've talked about today. So the challenge for a lot of these candidates is to get their name recognition out there, but also not be to the point where people are so fatigued with politics that it feels like a never-ending campaign. And here we are, 13 months before the primary, and we're talking about all this stuff. I think that's another challenge, but there's a lot of work that can be done by these candidates between now and then to do what they need to do to be in place for that final push. But the general public, I think right now, is not quite as tuned in as we all are.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And of course, you know, what we'll also see during the primary is a lot of candidates trying to thread that needle of wanting to emerge from the primary, wanting to win, but not wanting to drag down sort of members of their own party such that they can't survive a general election. That's something that has dogged Republicans in particular in the last couple of election cycles, is these kind of bruising primaries from which the candidate kind of can't emerge so strongly. And so now Democrats are kind of facing, as again, the stakes for them are like a potential trifecta, or at least trying to flip one chamber, hold on to that veto pen, of not kind of doing the same thing, falling into those same mistakes of you know, crabs in a barrel kind of dragging everyone down as they try to emerge. Well, big week for us here at Rewind, and that'll do it. I am Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.